Good evening. So, Katagiri has a chapter called Delusion and Suffering, which is talking about the mud and water expression that Dogen has in here. Flowing, he's explaining flowing, being spattered with mud and getting wet with water. Water is also time. He said, just actualize all time as all being. There is nothing extra. The so-called extra being is a thoroughly extra being. Thus the time being half actualized is half of the time being completely actualized, and a moment that seems to be missed is also completely being. In other words, there is nothing that can be anything but being. No matter what it is, it just has to be time as being and being as time. Even the moment before or after the moment that appears to be missed is also complete in itself, the time being. Don't confuse, mistakenly confuse it as non-being. Do not forcefully assert it as being. So that's, maybe Violet understands the physical parts of the physics side of that, because it sounds a little hard to grasp. But Katagiri is talking about going astray. He says, going astray doesn't seem to be good, but actually we have to go astray because in daily life we live in the world of 12 hours. So that's what Dogen is saying too. We have to live in the situation that we're in, not in this exalted, beautiful idea of how things are, or even the truth of it in a certain way, because our minds are so involved with taking care of things. In eternal time, a table is not something separate from your life. But in daily life, you have to pay attention to the table as a separate being, in order to figure out the best way to deal with the table without killing the life of the table. That's a very important point. That each thing is a being. The being, the out to save all beings, and we mean the tables too. Then you experience the pain of being separate from the table if you kill the table. And you suffer from it. So the point of Buddhist practice is to act. Mud and water are just time. So in mud and water, there's always an opportunity to live in peace and harmony. And we all know that. We all live in mud and water. We all do. And sometimes it's very messy and very uncomfortable, but even so, it's peace and harmony. In the center of every disaster is peace and harmony. It's very weird. He said there's always an opportunity to live in peace and harmony, but we have to do something right now. If we do something wholeheartedly, all sentient beings come together and support our lives. When you see daily life and eternal time simultaneously, suffering disappears. Then he talks about becoming a monk. Says there's no escape. I just do it, he says. He says, Dogen has another interesting way of presenting the nature of suffering. He says, the past swallows up the present and spits it out. It's impossible to understand this intellectually, but it means reflecting on yourself. That is dualist human consciousness. There's a me, and that's the me looking at the me. So then there are two of us, but there's just one of us. So that also is very weird. But then something happens. The past spits out the present. And this means gratitude. The past is alive in the present as gratitude, because suffering is great fertilizer. This is something that Chogyam Trungpa used to say too. Just plow it in, plow in the dreck. It's good stuff. When we reflect on ourselves and suffer, we can realize that we are deluded and repent and return to oneness. If you break the bottom of suffering, you laugh. Nothing can imitate this, not animals, birds, or trees, nothing. Only humans can become great laughter through suffering. I'm not entirely sure that's true. But I think more and more about how everything else is besides human nature, and I think nature is has the same qualities. I've seen animals laugh. I've seen animals rescue each other. It's just amazing. I've seen them dance in the forest. But in any case, in terms of time, we're the ones who carry memory deeply and suffer from it. But we are only just in the present at the same time. So being able to realize that takes the sting out of the suffering if we're able to disengage from the agony of what happened or what we did before. And sometimes that's very, very difficult. I just talked to my grandson, and Jeffrey knows this, about veterans who come back and try to reintegrate, and it is so, so hard. So even if specific memories don't arise, the whole feeling of it keeps arising. It's just laid down in our bodies what happens. And until we can actually touch that place and find the peace that's underneath it, life is really, really hard. Can't sleep. too nervous to make a phone call. It's really tough. Katagiri says the past, the present, and the future are beings, but they're interconnected right now. And it's what we said a bit last week too, that it's all right here. He says, then eternity is alive in everyday life. He said, how do we make eternity alive in our lives? With our wisdom, we can do it. To place yourself in a harmony of time and timelessness is to practice. Being in the harmony of 12 hours and timelessness is enlightenment. So I was talking with a friend this morning, and we were both agreeing that everything that's happening these days has a very strong effect on our mind. I've been thinking about this a lot, about the things that I read and the kind of attitude that a lot of writers have now. It's kind of acidic, I would say, or a little snarky. There's not a lot of what I would call gentleness and kindness in the writing that you read. The people are all bringing up all the problems, and of course it's really important to do that. That's what journalism is about, but everyday life isn't all just problems. And yet we begin to feel as if it is. It begins to feel that everything is just a boiling of things that we can't take care of, we can't do anything about. And I said, well, I've started reading things that make me laugh and reading things that give me joy. I'm reading D.H. Lawrence now, an account of his exploration of Sardinia, which is a little island off of Italy. And he just loved it so much. He loved all the problems that came up, all the things that happened and the weird people that he met, and the way he was able to describe his whole situation was so different from what I read in contemporary work. And yet he was having a real hard time, a lot of it. It was really, really difficult, but he could see it in a different way. In an enthusiastic way, which is a kind of enlightenment way. It really means a kind of connected to heaven kind of way, that you see the wholeness of the situation with your own appreciation for it. Well, look at that. This guy is just, you know. And we don't have anything to show us how to do that anymore, I think. And I think this material is something like that, because he's so honest and straightforward. And his life is in there, as well as sort of esoteric teachings that we talk about, time and being, which are essential for us to know, essential for us to practice, but not to be burdened by, and not to be burdened by whatever is happening now. I think that's the main thing that Dogen is saying. Just be where you are. And if it's in a very bad place, just be there. And let it be. If it's a very good place, be there too. But take it as a gift. That's why he says gratitude. Everything that happens to us is a gift. A lot of times we're not very grateful, but it helps to find the gratitude. So it was a short chapter and a short follow-up. Maybe you all have something to add. Jeffrey?
Well, not surprisingly, someone else in this room is about the same way. Mm-hmm. And of course, I have found that reading poetry and I find the gift of always locating the right poet at the right time.
Yes.
That kind of moment.
Yes.
My wife and I have been reading as a result of an article that appeared in the Sunday Chronicle about W.S. Merwin, who just celebrated his 90th birthday.
Yes.
And this wonderful poem, On the Anniversary of My Death.
Yes.
We've been reading it and reading it and turning it over. It's such a wonderful poem.
It's beautiful.
And I've been using a lot of the metaphors from this book recently in my life, seeing how working from that pivot of nothingness, and as I move into the next moment, I see how old karmic habits, I can literally sense a direction I might go, and I'm not going there anymore. I'm going in a really new direction, which is much more. And you used the word tonight three times. You used the word weird.
Mm-hmm.
Weird is an interesting word to me.
Yes.
And I find it for myself. It's more. I'm using weird less and mystery a little bit more. That not knowing mind,
yes,
is moving in that area. Like it's a real mystery. Why is it that the 60s seem to be repeating themselves in a new form? That a lot of this acidic quality, which I encounter on watching political discussion, or reading in all the magazines that
right.
I take great, I mean, those are the ones I want to read, but it's like the same thing.
Yes.
It's a little snarky, everything's riveted up, and so I need to go to those texts, and I need to step back and see what's going on in my garden.
Yes.
You know, cut the carrots right. There's other things that I can do with my mind, but I do feel that our culture right now, our collective culture, seems to be saturating itself in something that is a little dark,
yeah,
and unhealthy, and feel like it's everyone's responsibility to be as aware of that as possible,
mm-hmm,
and do whatever you can for yourself and for others to make it, to neutralize it.
Yes.
It's a little bit like pH balance and, you know, yeah, oil and vinegar and those opposites that seem to sometimes make things so bad for people.
I think we can do that. I think you're right. I think we can do that.
Yeah.
My friend reads books about animals.
Yeah.
And that's wonderfully inspiring. And I read books about trees, and it's the same thing. They're so kind to each other. They're so helpful. It's really wonderful. And ancient Chinese poetry, that's another one. I have a huge book of it, and it's, you know, whatever their lives, the poets' lives were, they just saw things so appreciatively, just a little drop of water or a leaf, and were moved by it. So I think it's very helpful to find ways of opening our minds rather than staying in a cloud, because the cloud is not helping.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not helping anyone. It's really not. Call that another kind of saving all sentient beings. Just read this book. I was reading a book today that somebody told me, called The Party, I think, by Henry Green, and it's about a group of very silly people in the 20s, and I was sitting in a doctor's office laughing my head out. That was just so funny. So I think I recommend that too. Anything else?
Well, another recommendation would be to go spend an hour in my wife's classroom with 4.5 and 5 year olds.
Oh yes.
That's another excellent way of being in a different kind of space that
yes.
will really, because of that mind that they're at that
mm.
point, it's pretty delicious territory.
Yes. Yes. Hard to find little kids who will sit still for you.
In that world, I am not Mr. Leonard or Jeffrey. I am Mr. Black Sox. And, you know, I cherish that name.
Yes.
And love it.
Anything else? Well, why don't we sit for a while? We've got 10 more minutes. We haven't, we don't have our Eno here tonight, but we're having a sit on Saturday.
Right. Well,
9-2-4. Yes.
And a business meeting, well, let's see. In the sequence, Angie will not be here next Tuesday night, and Marie's going to fill us in on the women poets that she learned about.
Oh, good, yes.
Instead of going to our sit, she's going to IMC Redwood City for a workshop seminar on Buddhist women poets. So, and she'll give a presentation next Tuesday. And then the following Tuesday, when Angie returns, we're going to have a business meeting after our regular schedule, starting at 8:10.
What's that date? What Tuesday is that?
The 28th.
28th. Thank you.
Racing through November.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
That's a week from tomorrow.
Do you have a talk energy that you think you provide?
Yeah.
Or do you, are you just gonna?
I will by the time I go there. Sometimes this is the very last minute, but something always comes. And your poets are going to speak on Thursday night,
Thursday,
right?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm emceeing that. I'm very excited. Our first opportunity to do it in Willard Lynn. And then we have something hopefully cooking with the Triton Museum and the five veteran painters who are going to be exhibiting there through, I believe, February. They haven't quite figured out how to use this, but we're going to do something there.
Mm.
It all just continues to unfold in a pretty mysterious way.
But you're mentoring them, right? The vets that you're mentors for them. Wouldn't you say?
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Giving them another thing to do besides suffer. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wonderful.